Hi and welcome back. This is Police Stories Podcast, episode 43. This is a series of short stories about my 28-year career in the UK police force or service. Hope you've been enjoying it so far. Thanks very much for listening. Downloads certainly doing very well. Really, really pleased. Probably by the time you hear this, I think we'll have hit 5,000 downloads, which is just mind-blowing to me. I can't believe that 5,000 people have actually, you know, vaguely interested in what I did during my career. I mean, in my mind, 4,500 of those are probably, you know, my family, but I suspect there is a few others than that. So thank you, and I'm hoping that it's continuing to be interesting for you. So today we're going to talk about another heavy subject, I'm afraid. You know, in the police, as I've said many times, there isn't that many light-hearted subjects, you know, and this is where some of the humour can come from that, you know, is what gets you through a day. Cops have always had some fairly sort of edgy humour, to say the least, but it's a coping mechanism, you know, it's the only way you get through. So today we're going to talk about child neglect and a couple of cases that I've been involved in. And we'll see how we get on for time as to whether I bring a third one in as well. But if I do, then I'll put in another warning about that, because that one's pretty horrendous as well. So, yes, if you don't want to hear about child neglect, then now is the time to switch off. It's a difficult one because I'm not in any way trying to, you know, trivialise this stuff. And I'm certainly not wanting to make this, you know, with lots of gory detail so that people can listen in, you know, but unfortunately we do all have a bit of a morbid, you know, curiosity about all things, and particularly police work, you know, and that's why there is the interest in all the sort of police podcasts and the detective shows and what have you, because people are intrigued at what goes on. Unfortunately, it's very rarely good, you know, and it never ceases to amaze me now when I see, you know, stuff on the telly or hear about stuff or read stuff, you know, on the internet about the just what, you know, people, humans are capable of doing to each other, whether it's to other adults or to children. You know, it seems, you know, well, it is absolutely mind-boggling. And if you thought about it too much, it would really eat you up. But this is another thing with being a cop, you know, you need to be able to compartmentalize those things, you know. And what comes even harder is at this point in my career, I had a very young daughter who was probably 2 or 3, maybe 5 years old at this point. So a lot of these sort of, you know, child neglect things I went to were kids of a similar age, so it comes even harder, you know. And in fact, I had, and this week we're going to talk about, well, I had a week literally from hell where I had kind of 2 or 3 major sort of child neglect type cases. They all came at once. It's a really tough week, you know, and it comes hard on you as on a human and a person. But we'll talk about them now. And that was the other thing I was going to say. So it's difficult as well because, you know, there's certain things I could hold back from this podcast and not talk about because they're, you know, really that unpleasant. But I am trying to give a warts and all, you know, account of my career. So it wouldn't be truthful if I held back kind of what I dealt with. And some of the people that have contacted me as a result of this podcast have been either people that have just joined the police or they're thinking about joining the police. Again, there's no point in me, you know, just telling all the fun stories that are, you know, unicorns and rainbows, because that isn't the reality. And I think, you know, if you're going to join the police or if you have just joined the police, then you need to steel yourself. You know, there is some really nasty stuff coming your way. Having said that, it's also very rewarding, you know. So let's get on with today then. So this first call that came in, same thing again, I was on the area car chugging around South London, and a call comes in to reports of screaming. Well, that's all we had. And once again, it's one of those calls, you know, that literally could be anything. You know, it could be, you know, people in the throes of passion, you know, or it could be, you know, someone getting murdered and everything in between. So you just don't know. And that's what I've always said, you know, response work, answering 999 calls is, you know, it's the sharp end for sure. And you just never know what you're going to deal with. So we went to this location where the screams had been reported from, and it was quite a big block of flats. Had a real mixture of people. Now, I mean, the whole of London is, they call it very often, you know, a melting pot, as other major cities, you know, every sort of colour and creed and race in there. And this block of flats was very sort of representative of that, you know, Absolutely, all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds in this location. So the ambulance was already there, and I'm very grateful for that, because had I been first on scene without an ambulance, it would have been really, really difficult to deal with the sort of first aid sign of this. We talked about first aid last week, and you have a basic level, but this was something else. So when I got there, the ambulance was outside, and I could hear some horrendous screams coming from within the ambulance, and I knew straight away, from my own daughter, they clearly weren't adult screams. So I sort of poked my head around the corner. We knew the ambulance crews pretty well, always got on really, really well with them and worked very well together, and kind of asked them, what's going on. And they had a small boy in the ambulance. He was probably about 3 or 4 years old, something like that. And he had terrible burns, really, really bad burns, that had come from his mum ultimately. The ambulance crew didn't really know too much what had gone on, because there was a bit of a language barrier, but and obviously their role is to deal with the sort of physical element of this, what was an assault, a terrible assault ultimately. And I saw the boy, and it was like he'd been, put in in the sun for hours on end with no sun cream. His body, and it was all over his body as well, his torso, because I think he was either just in a nappy or maybe just some underpants, and so you could see all his torso. He was bright red, and the skin was peeling off from some of his body as well. Poor little mite, he was really struggling. Of course, it was absolute agony for him, so he was screaming the place down as well, and they were trying to get some sort of pain medication into him, but that's difficult, because you can imagine you've got, a young boy. And they were trying to inject him with things and get lines into him and get all sorts of monitors on him, doing a great job. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't want their job for anything. It's really tough for them to deal with it. But I said to the ambulance crew, "So sorry, what's the address? Where are we going?" Because we didn't even have an address. We literally just had the screams, and they said, "We think it's number 23 or whatever," and sort of vaguely pointed up the stairs. So we were the first cops there, and we went up the stairs and found a mum in there with a couple of other kids. One was older, I think, maybe like 6 or 7, and there was one younger as well that was not quite a baby, probably a toddler, sort of 18 months, something like that. And we said to her, because we didn't really know at this point what had gone on, we said to her, what had happened? What's happened here? And I say her English wasn't very good, but she basically explained that, the boy in the ambulance was a very naughty child, and straight away this got my back up, because I had a feeling what was coming, and for her to be saying this to me, but you're trying to desperately, maintain some sort of professional element to this, because it's clearly it's exactly what you don't want to do. You want to shout and scream at her, and quite frankly, shake her about and ask her what the hell she's done, but that's it's just not what we do. So professional face on, and saying, "What's happened?" "Right, he's a naughty child," she said. "I've told him and told him that he couldn't have," and it was something pathetic, like he couldn't have a lolly, or something like that. "He kept asking me for a lolly. He wouldn't stop. It was a summer's day, and I told him no, and he was tugging at my trousers, tugging at my skirt, trying to get my attention, kept asking for the same thing. I told him no, it wasn't happening. He wasn't having one. And in the end, he just pushed it too far," she said. I'm literally just can't believe what I'm hearing at this point. I'm saying, "So what did you do?" She said, "Well, I went off into the lounge, and when I came back out, he'd opened the freezer himself," which was at, sort of chest height for him, waist level for us, for adults. And he'd gone in, and she actually found him with the freezer door open, and he'd slid out one of the freezer trays, and he was helping himself to a lolly, which he, bless him, he couldn't even open himself, because they're quite difficult to open, and he was, very young, so he wasn't even capable of opening this lolly. He just got it. But she went, by her own admission, absolutely crazy at this. And I said, "What did you do then? He's got terrible, terrible burns. How did he get those burns?" And she said, "Well, he needed to be punished." And again, you're sort of incredulous, right? So what happened? So she said, "I picked him up, I took him, and I plonked him in the bath." And I went, "Right, okay." She said, and then I went and I just boiled the kettle. So I got the kettle. He needed to be punished. She kept making this point. He needed to be punished. He was a bad child. And I was going to show him that no means no. And so she got the kettle that had just boiled, had him in the bath, and just poured this boiling hot water all over his poor little body. And, you know, the effects were instantaneous and, you know, horrendous. And the poor kid, you know, he was in such a state. And I was waiting at some point when she was telling me the story for the penny to drop, for her to suddenly go, oh my God, you know, what I've done is absolutely horrendous. I should, you know, burn in hell. But there was absolutely none of that. There was no recognition. She just kept repeating, he was a naughty child and he needs to be punished, you know. And in the end, I had to say to her, you know, are you kidding me? Just listen to what you're telling me. Your child wanted a lolly. And rather than just telling him no and leaving it at that, or, you know, anything very low level and minor, you put him in the bath and you poured boiling water over him. I said, have you seen the injuries you've caused to him? Have you seen the state of him? I said, I doubt he's ever going to recover. You know, he's going to be permanently scarred. And that's physically, mentally as well. He's old enough to remember this. So what that's going to do to him, you know, I just dread to think. So needless to say, you call up at this point when there's something that is out of the ordinary or that needs sort of extra dealing with, or needs extra resources, your first point of call should be your sergeant, you know, and chances are your sergeant is then going to get hold of your inspector. And depending on just how bad it is, both of those are going to come out to the scene. Now, later on, we'll talk about going forward, not too far in the future. You know, I was an acting sergeant and was one of the ones that was going out sort of firefighting these jobs. And I have to say, it was one of the jobs that I enjoyed most in the police, because you went around to the sort of more urgent, more serious stuff and did that sort of firefighting, that initial, you know, investigation. And you're checking on your cops, you know, are your cops okay? Because don't forget, a lot of cops are very young in service, so they need to be, you know, reassured and steered in the right direction. It may well have been the first time that anyone has dealt with this. And in fact, it was my first time. I've dealt with child neglect before, but nothing quite like this, quite as overt. And so for sure, you know, I really appreciate it when they both came out, the sergeant and the inspector, and they just, you know, I mean, there was nothing more for us to do. Clearly she was getting arrested. She was getting arrested for a serious assault. Certainly in England, they call it, you know, a GBH or a wounding with intent. So GBH being grievous bodily harm. And she definitely caused that to him for sure. And so she was arrested and taken out to the car. But of course, it opens up a can of worms, because you've also got two other kids. So perhaps your first instance might be that you're going to try and find, you know, a friendly neighbour, or perhaps somebody that, you know, normally looks after the kids. Because quite often in these scenarios, you know, they have, oh, the neighbours have got kids and we look after each other's kids when we need to pop to the shop or do whatever. But the problem is with that, you're also relying on this mum. And I'm talking about this mum who's just poured boiling water over her child to tell me, you know, who she trusts to look after her kids. And quite frankly, I didn't want to listen to anything she had to say, or, you know, certainly wasn't going to trust her judgment in relation to who could look after her kids. So then you go to social services. So it's an emergency call to the social services and they send someone round. And of course, there can be a delay as well, at which point the child has actually been taken off to hospital by the ambulance. But what we've done before that happens is my colleague who was with me, she'd gone in the ambulance with the child to the hospital, because that's what's called a continuity officer. You need, when you've had a very serious incident, whether it's a stabbing, a shooting, or, you know, or something like this, and there is a chance, you know, that person may die, you really want to put that continuity officer in the ambulance. And it's several reasons. Firstly, it's so it covers sort of forensic side of things, and that chain of evidence that begins at the house that continues on to the hospital, where ultimately we're going to carry out an investigation. You want that link with the child. So when the inspector says to me, well, how's the child now? You know, if you've just allowed them to leave in the ambulance and have not, you know, put anyone in with them, you're struggling to find that out, because you can't really get hold of that ambulance crew. Whereas now with my colleague in the ambulance, I've got a direct link to the ambulance. So at any point I can call them and say, what's the latest? Yeah, we've just arrived at hospital. The child is just being seen by the consultant. And the consultant has told me that, you know, he's got, you know, 50% burns or whatever it was, you know. So you get that instant update. And the other thing is, you have to also be thinking ahead and considering the possibility that this child could die from his injuries. And if that happens, again, you need to know that very quickly, because there's an evidence chain, and of course, you know, that would then become a murder investigation, so it changes completely. So yeah, continuity officer, really important role, and one that you must have. So I remained at the scene, and I think the kettle was still on the floor in the bathroom. So once she'd been arrested, and in fact, other colleagues then attended and took her away. I think I did the arresting, but she was taken away. Clearly, this job was very serious and was going to be dealt with ultimately by CID, the Criminal Investigation Department detectives, or maybe even one of the child abuse teams, you know, because it's quite a specialist area. He was probably too young, but when they start to come to interview, you know, children and things, you need very specially trained officers for that. Again, a job I would not want at all, but you know, I'm glad that there's people out there that do want to do it, because when it comes to investigations like this, you know, we're able to check that out. So yeah, Charles off to hospital. I've remained at the scene, and then scenes of crime, the SOCO have come out, CSI, whatever you want to call them, and they've taken photographs of the scene. Things like, you know, the bath, the kettle on the floor, and of course, those other two kids, particularly the older one, will definitely be interviewed by one of the specialist child interviewing team, because they were present, maybe not in the room, but certainly in the flat when it happened. So they'll also be able to, you know, give us some evidence and tell us what has happened. You know, during that incident. So really, really important. And again, that's why the sergeant and inspector are there, just to make sure that all these things are in process, that all the angles have been covered, because the last thing you want to do is this person to get off of it, you know, at court, because we've missed some vital bit of evidence, or there's a, you know, there's a breakdown in that sort of continuity. So really, really important. So that was that incident, and ultimately she did go on to get convicted at court. And I mean, she got a sentence, but you know, to my mind, it basically life wouldn't have been enough, you know, for, as far as I was concerned, particularly what I saw. But she got a reasonable sentence given the circumstances. And some people will be going, you know, crazy at this point, going, reasonable? You call that reasonable? She got 6 years in the end in prison. So yeah, nowhere near enough. But again, totally out of the police's hands, you know, and that's what people don't get. We put the evidence before the court decide the sentencing, and they have some guidelines. And yeah. Never going to be enough in this scenario. So the second incident we're going to talk about was it came in the same week, as I said. So I was still, you know, a bit affected, to be honest with you, by that job, particularly as my daughter was a very similar age. The call came in, and it was again very, very low level. It was from some neighbours. It was in a really nice area, really nice house. And one thing you quickly learn in the police, it doesn't matter if you have money or if you have a big house. You know, it's just as likely that terrible things are going on behind closed doors as it is in, you know, perhaps, you know, not such a affluent area and not such a big house. You know, it doesn't necessarily follow, you know, that bad things happen in certain types of houses. Anything can happen anywhere at any time. And this scenario was, you know, really nice house, really nice area, clearly a very, very affluent area. You know, there was like, you know, a pair of brand new Mercedes on every kind of driveway. And the call was from a neighbour saying, I'm a bit concerned about the kids. And the overriding thing that these people always say when they ring up is, I don't want to make a fuss, you know, and I like my neighbours, but I'm just a bit concerned about the kids. It seems to me that they, you know, the parents, mum and dad, sort of regularly go off to work. And in the past, they've had you know, sort of child carers, or, you know, the kids have gone off to nursery. But, you know, that's not happened recently. And it almost seems to me like the kids are being left home alone. So I'm just a bit concerned. It was all very apologetic. And, you know, that was how it went. So I went around to see the neighbours, and they said, and they'd heard some screaming and shouting from within the house again. So I went around to see these people, lovely old couple, you know, who explained basically what I've just told you, you know. And I said, OK, well, I'll pop round and have a look, you know. And at this point, I'm thinking, hopefully they've just made a mistake, and it's just purely that, you know, the kids are playing up today and the child mind is there, and, you know, and it'll all be good. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be the case. So I knocked on the door, and a child came to the door, and he was older. I would say 9 or 10 years old, something like that. But unusually, he was in a nappy, nothing else, just a nappy, no top, no bottoms. And he opened the door himself. So I said to him straight away, you know, hiya, mate, you're right. Is mum or dad in at all? You know, can I speak to mum or dad? And he just kind of looked at me and sort of turned his head a bit sort of quizzically and sort of grunted at me. He didn't form words. He just made like some strange noises, you know. And then he left the door open and he turned and kind of run back into the house. And I could look kind of over where he'd gone and I could see there was a big corridor and it led off to a large sort of kitchen. And I could see him in the distance down the other end of the corridor, and he was doing something to the sink. I couldn't make it out, but I was kind of thinking, well, I'm not sure what he's doing. I need to go in and establish what's happened here. So I was shouting and going, hi, is the police? Can anyone hear me? It's the police. We're just going to come in. Is that all right? Are you okay in here? Everything all right? You know, and you're trying to, you need to put that out, because what you don't want to do is sort of burst in on someone's house. You have got a power of entry at this point, because you are starting to think that something is seriously wrong in this house. So that would give you a power of entry under the circumstances. So it's all legal and above board. So I walked in down the corridor, down to the kitchen to where the child was. And the child, I realised what he was doing then. He was tapping on the sink, on the edge of the sink. He was standing in front of it and he was just taller than the sink, but he couldn't reach the taps. And he was trying to reach out for the taps, and he was tapping, you know, on the side, and he was sort of pointing at the tap and making these sort of grunting noises. And I realized that he was thirsty. He wanted a drink, so there was a couple of sort of plastic beakers on the side, so I filled one up and gave it to him, and he absolutely drained it in seconds. You know, it was quite a big sort of mug of water, and it was gone within seconds. And then he was back to tapping again and pointing at the tap. So I was realizing, god, this kid is really thirsty. And once he'd had two, he tapped again, and I filled the third one up for him. But this time he ran off into what I now know was the lounge just round the corner, where there was two other kids. So there was three children in this house altogether. He was the eldest, and I say he was about 10. And then there was one who was maybe 6, and again, a sort of 2 or 3 year old. Same thing, all in nappies, no clothes at all. And I couldn't find any adults in the house, so they had been left alone. Now, this house, you know, from the outside, like I said, you know, perfectly trimmed hedges, and, you know, there was no cars on the drive, but I suspected, you know, there was going to be two sort of brand new cars on the drive, and from the exterior looked like, you know, a very nice sort of posh house. But internally, it was an absolute state. Now, interestingly, the people who lived there must have known, because the hallway, so if you open the door to, you know, a neighbour or a delivery person, your hallway looked absolutely fine, and that bit of the kitchen. The moment you went round the corner into the rest of the lounge, and then later when I subsequently went upstairs, that place was an absolute tip. It was just dirty nappies everywhere. There was rubbish on the floor. There was food wrappers. You know, there was just, this place was an absolute state and just did not fit in at all with what, you know, the outside looked like. So I was trying to speak to these kids and trying to establish what was going on, but I just couldn't, none of them could speak, and I couldn't get any sort of words out of them at all. So again, I called up the sergeant and the inspector, and I said, look, you need to come out. This is really strange. I'm not quite sure what I'm dealing with here, but certainly these kids are home alone. And they were very, very skinny as well. You know, they were, I wouldn't quite say they were skin and bone, but, you know, that they certainly weren't, to me, of a normal sort of height and weight, not being a medical person, but being a dad. So I was by myself at this point. I was single crewed. I'd been out to this address by myself. So there was no other cop. So I'd gone back outside and while the kids are in there. And sorry, I don't think what I mentioned was, so the third cup of water that I gave to this kid, he ran off with it, having had two himself, and gave it to his two brothers. There were three boys in total. And they, again, were kind of, you know, glugging down this water. And in fact, I went in a couple more times and filled it up, and he took it through to them as well. So the three of them were so thirsty, there was no sort of drink left for them at all or anything. And they had no access to it. So it wasn't like they could turn the tap on themselves or get it. So no wonder they were so thirsty. And at this point, it was sort of mid-afternoon. It was maybe like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So if they had been left, you know, kind of 8 in the morning or something, when the parents had gone off to work, they'd had hours with nothing to drink at all. So I went back outside, and the neighbour came back out, and this time both of them came out. It was male and female, and I was chatting to them. And in fact, they'd ordered some food at this point. They'd said to me, we're waiting for our takeaway. And I think they'd ordered some, I think it was fish and chips or something like that, very British. So I was off speaking to the husband again, and he was outside, and the delivery turned up, and the wife met the delivery driver, took the food off him, and she disappeared off behind me. And I was waiting for my sergeant and inspector to turn up. They turned up, and we went back into the house. What I didn't realise was the wife of the couple that had rung the police initially had actually gone in to the address behind me, and she had, you know, this bag of food with her, not really thinking, and the kids apparently had started, you know, sort of tapping the bag and clawing at the bag of food. So she'd taken out one of the portions of chips, which was quite a big portion, and she'd given it to them. Well, the scene I saw when I came in afterwards just tells you just what a sorry state of affairs this was, because my inspector and sergeant turned up, and then I went back into the house. And in fact, the husband from next door, the guy who'd rung us initially, came in with us as well, because obviously we were asking him questions about, so where do they work? Do you know what car they drive? Because we're trying to establish how we find these parents. And when I came into the lounge, I said to the sergeant inspector, you're not going to believe the state of this place, you know. And it was, you know, horrendous, with all the rubbish on the floor and the dirty nappies and what have you. But we came around the corner to see something that I'll never forget. And it was the two portions of chips that the neighbour had just had delivered. And she'd given it or passed them to the kids to have some chips, thinking they would just, you know, take one or two and that was that. These kids were virtually feral, and they had ripped the food out of her hands, thrown it on the floor, opened the packs of chips, and they were now on their hands and knees in their nappies, with their hands sort of by their sides, not even using their fingers to eat. It was literally like you put down dog food for a dog, and they had their faces buried in these chips, the three of them, and were just eating them straight out the wrapper off the floor. Like I say, not even picking them up with their fingers, just it was like, you know, they were three dogs that got fed in bowls on the floor regularly. That's how they got fed. And ultimately, I think that's what was happening to them, because, you know, they had no sort of social skills. It turns out that the older one, who clearly, you know, should have been talking, and you should have been able to converse with him quite easily at 10 years old, he couldn't talk. And the parents had told the neighbours that, oh, yeah, he's got something wrong with him, you know, so he's developing very late, and he's, you know, he's seeing speech therapy people and all that. And that was absolute rubbish. None of that was true at all. It was because they had absolutely nothing to do with these children, incredibly. And what I don't understand is that, you know, when you have a child in the UK, for that first sort of 6 months or year when they're babies, you get assigned like a health worker who comes around and, you know, weighs them and measures them and just helps you out with, you know, developing children and explaining sort of what happens and make sure that they have their jabs. Now, in all cases with these three kids, that must have happened to start with. But presumably, as they developed and everything seemed normal, after a period of time, I think it's maybe 6 months or a year, you know, that health worker takes a step back, and then you're on your own looking after the kids, which for most people isn't a problem. But it was clearly a problem for these people. So whether they didn't care, whether they, you know, had no interest in the kids, I'm not sure which it was, but they basically had been locking them in a room, having nothing to do with them, had kind of thrown food into this room, because when we went up to one of the bedrooms, there were signs of more sort of scraps on the floor, but that door was closed, so they couldn't get in there. I think it was locked. But obviously, it was like these three kids just lived in this tiny little room by themselves with nothing between them, walking around in nappies all the time, which occasionally got changed, but when they did, they were thrown on the floor. And then they literally, it was like it was a kennel, you know, the door was opened, food was thrown in on the floor, and then the three of them had a scramble and basically ate it straight off the floor. Terrible, terrible thing to see. And to see those kids ripping into those chips like that on the floor was heartbreaking, quite frankly. Really, really nasty job. So obviously, again, similar scenario to the first one, the social workers came out. Took all three kids into care. We've got powers to take kids into care anyway, the police have, so you don't need social workers there. But certainly, if it's a bit slower time like this, you know, clearly you're not going to leave the kids. And social workers came out and took the kids, and they go off into emergency accommodation where they'd be looked after. And then starts this investigation process as to just what's been happening to those poor kids. And again, when the parents were located, I think they actually turned up soon after the kids had been taken. Because I'd left the scene by then, but they were both arrested for child neglect. And they got pitiful sentences again. You know, I'm sorry to say, I think it was something like 2 or 3 years each ultimately, and the kids were taken into care. But again, absolutely no way, you know, sort of the right sentence. Again, you know, I'm not really sure what the right sentence would have been, but a lot longer than that, I'd have liked to think. So very, very frustrating jobs to deal with, and certainly ones that live with me. Very tough to deal with. And how the people that work on the sort of full-on, you know, child abuse investigation teams get on, I don't know, because although I had a terrible week and I had both of those in the same week, ultimately it could have been months till I came across another one like that, and it might not have been anything like as bad. But the guys and girls that are on those teams deal with that stuff every single day, day in, day out. So I don't know how they are able to separate that from sort of work and home, even if you haven't got kids, you know, how you live with that stuff all the time. I don't know. But again, I'm glad that there are people out there that are willing to do that. So there we go. Yeah, another sad couple of stories on a very difficult subject. Hopefully you found it interesting. And we'll move on next week. I can't say it's going to be a barrel of laughs next week either. But again, hopefully you find it interesting hearing what the police get up to. All right, you take it easy, and I'll speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye.